you about the Shotover Holiday Park at Arthur's Point.
Yeah,
my first one. I'm going to ask you about different sites. We went and visited the location. In your evidence, you cover the principles for the visitor accommodation subzone. And one of that is that generally no small subzones or single parcel subzones. I think that's quite important because you use that from time to time to recommend not having a small one parcel subzone, such as, for example, the one in the Delos properties one, and there are other reasons as well. So I just want to make sure that that we don't have any conflicts or inconsistencies in terms of the level of flexibility that is around that principle and how that applies to the Shotover Park in terms of it. Could you say that that is a small one parcel subzone, or am I not looking flexibly enough at that?
No, I think you're quite right here. Yep. And I guess I've taken the approach, a similar approach to that was taken through the rezonings in part one, but I do think there needs to be a little bit more flexibility because these are subzones rather than, you know, you're not changing the underlying zone, which the general view through part one was that very, very, very small zones, you know, like a little tiny bit of high density surrounded by low density was core planning practice and not supported by the PDP. But I do think there could be a little bit more flexibility for subzones. But I do think, we've sort of started off with the notified ones, and some of those are over one parcel or one site. So.
So there's already some flexibility from that particular principle.
Yes, that's right. Yes, so I have tried to apply it, but I have been mindful of that potential for inconsistency. So I've tried to use it as a guide, not set in stone. But I've tried to look perhaps more at the circumstances around the particular site. So rather than a flat no, that I wouldn't recommend anything over a single parcel, it's more looking at the circumstances. And the differences for me and the circumstances for this one is it's an established activity, already has a subzone over most of it. Whereas the Frankton one, for example, completely different residential environment. The spot zone applies quite well to that, but so do a lot of other factors. So I definitely know what you're saying.
But you've, in your view, you think there's room for some flexibility?
Yes.
When looking at the other principles or the other factors to consider?
Yes, certainly. Yep, certainly for this sort of size of the overlay, yes, I think there needs to be flexibility, and particularly because you do start off with some notified ones that are very small, and they've probably been historic.
Some of the small spot requests, say some of the ones along Queenstown Hill going on Franklin here, that above the Franklin Road, are for established activities that are more in the nature of residential visitor accommodation, as opposed to say the Shotover Holiday Park, which is clearly in the full visitor accommodation. Does that make that, so that's a consideration?
Yes, it has been. Yeah. The nature of what's going on, has it been lawfully established? Has it been established by resource consents? Does it need anything additional? rationale for the underlying zoning. The holiday park probably would, because what it's doing is not residential in nature. The RBA sites along Queenstown Hill, above Frankton Road, they're different. They've been developed as residential units, and they've been applying for consents, and I think that's their most appropriate route for those, to figure out what they should be doing in that environment, in that residential zone, rather than applying an overlay. And they're different, again, a lot of those are different residential environments as well, compared to perhaps, you know, an established holiday park. Everybody knows what it is, they already live next to it. Going forward, I mean, I think I have noted that you still have to consider that these could redevelop as a different type of VA under that subzoning, enabling provisions. The same would apply to the other sites along Queenstown Hill. So although it might be a dwelling at the moment that's used for RBA, perhaps all year round, they could redevelop it with the assistance of the overlay, and that may not be appropriate.
Okay, thank you for that. The next site I want to ask you about is the one on Golden Terrace, next to the Sherwood Lodge, or whatever it's called. In that case, it was notified as a subzone, but we have a submission asking for that to be removed.
Yes.
Now, you talk about this application that's been over that site for some time for visitor accommodation, but is on hold.
Yes.
And hasn't been for some time. And when we went to the site, I mean, it's definitely hasn't got visitor accommodation there. It's just covered in a bit of scrub and a bit of clear land. It's and it's at a different level from the Sherwood site. It's sort of separate from it. So, I mean, I was interested in, do you have any further knowledge of the application on that site, why it's on hold, if it's likely to be activated, and also, if one puts that application to one side, do you see that more as a residential site than a visitor accommodation site in the future?
Yes, so I haven't looked into the application status recently, but I think when I was finalising these documents, it was still on hold because I think the council planner has said to them it's going to be notified and they don't want to be notified, so they've just sort of reached a stalemate. And putting that aside, yes, I think it probably is more suitable as residential. They've had that subzone for a long time. Nothing's been done there. As you say, it's not associated with the Sherwood. It probably was when the whole subzone was put on there, but it's not associated anymore. It's not owned by the Sherwood. They're not seeking to expand.
It's not even owned by the Sherwood.
No, the company name is a little bit similar, but I had a look through the company's office details and I couldn't find any directors in common. So they had some name, Sherwood Manor Properties Limited, but that's not the same company that owns the Sherwood Hotel. Yeah, I checked through just to see if there was a relationship and it was going to be an extension of the Sherwood, but no, it's completely different.
When was that application lodged?
I think it was around August last year.
So,
it's been on hold since August last year. I'm not sure when it was lodged. It must have been earlier 2017, going by the RM number.
So it would have been when the proposed district plan had no provision for it.
Yes, so they would have been going under the operative
yes.
provisions that had the VASZ.
Mm.
Yes. Yep. So that was kind of my comment about, well, they might still be trying to do something here. I can't remember how I worded it, but I was thinking along the lines of pulling the rug out from under their feet and going, sorry, you don't have anything now.
Have they lodged any further submission?
No, they haven't been involved at all, I've seen.
now that she can't have things on hold forever?
Yes, I thought that applicants can't choose to just put it on hold because that's been a scourge in this district.
I'm not sure when the council chases up on that. I'll look into that, and see if it is being applied to this one or not.
But apart from the sort of lingering concern,
there is a provision to that effect. I'll just check the time, but I think it's about 18 months.
Is it?
Yes, yeah. I'll confirm
so
that.
So it'll be over 12 months now. I think there were more, that wasn't the only one that we had, but there was something that had been on hold for some time. But that may be another hearing spring that I had there.
We'll find out about that. But if you put that, your concern about pulling the rug out from under your feet to one side, and you just look at it as it is, then your recommendation would have been to remove the, or not continue with the notified BA.
Yes, I think so. Just because it's been drawn to our attention by a submitter, I haven't gone through all of the BAECs with that same fine-tooth comb. But I do agree with the submitter's comments about the site.
Excuse me if I could just respond now. It's section 91C of the RMA, and the time frame is 130 working days. After that time, the consent authority must decide to return the application or continue to process it.
26 weeks.
It's about half a year.
Yeah, it's not less.
It should have been dealt with.
The consent plan I moved to the policy team, so maybe it's just been languishing. Is he still here?
Languishing is a good word. Okay, well, thank you for that. Now, I'll leave Commissioner Nixon to ask you about 9 Frankton Road, the Greenwood sort of Copthorne site. That's one of the sites that we've visited. You happy to talk about that? I'll just ask it, and I'll ask a couple of other questions while I'm here. In terms of, have you been to the Glen Dean site, the Burden site?
The Humvee and Motor Camp?
Yes.
No, I haven't been right inside it. I've been past it.
But you haven't, so therefore you wouldn't have been to the extended area, the area in the rural zone that they that they possibly got the opportunity to seek a VA subzone over.
I'm not as familiar.
Help us with where it actually is, or on the ground, or...
Do you have to have togs to get to
it? Yes, is the area the evidence is about the same as the area they've applied for? Well, we can ask them, of course, but you can't help us with that.
I've only sort of had time to sort of look at what they put in and respond. But I can go and look,
If you did go and look, I'd suggest to you take a GPS with a map, so that an electronic map with a GPS on it, so that you can actually check where you are.
Yep.
I will be asking Mr. White, if there will be any problem, to assist us in this as well.
In terms of the VAs in rural zones, you say there's no VA subzone approach in the rural zones, but what is the policy direction relating to visitor accommodation in the rural zones?
Policy direction.
Or just general in the rural zone, objectives and policies relating to visitor accommodation generally, as opposed to a VA subzone?
Right, okay. So it's in chapter 21, it falls into those objections and policies that are under appeal at the moment for providing for other activities or diversification.
But 21.29, which is about diversification.
Yes, yep. And I did take a bit of guidance from the hearing panel's report on the VAEZs in the rural living zones where are these things appropriate to maintain landscape values.
Well, to be fair, that report, which you're referring to the report which removed that was due to the inadequacy of the Section 32 report, more than anything else, rather than setting a framework for with how visitor accommodation should be dealt with.
So for the rural zone, I've taken guidance from just how it's provided for at the moment as a discretionary activity, and there's no framework for subzone overlays. And people have asked for them, and that it's just difficult to see how to provide for them. The framework that we have has been prepared for the residential zones, the urban zones, and doesn't easily or naturally apply and move over to rural zones where the effects are completely different.
So have you got chapter 21 open above there?
Yes.
If you look at 21.29, which is this provision for diversification of farming and other rural activities, and then you look down at 21.293, provide for the establishment of activities such as tourism, commercial recreation, or visitor accommodation located within farms, where these enable landscape values and indigenous biodiversity to be sustained. So, how do you interpret that policy? And do you see that the providing for VA as a full discretionary activity is the way to implement that policy?
It's certainly the way it's written in here at the moment, and given that a lot of rural zones are also ONLs, I would be hesitant to see a more enabling regime in those areas in particular. Because it doesn't fit with the framework that's been put together for the rural zones, which is not very enabling.
Have you had the opportunity to consider the Stream 13 hearing reports?
Not in detail. No.
Well, there are two in particular. One in Halfway Bay, related to Halfway Bay Station, and another one related to the station on the other side of the lake. I forgot the name of it now, but it's between, it's immediately south of Devil's Staircase station there. In both cases, the hearing panel refused the refusal of the request for rezoning of rural visitor accommodation or something similar, but in both cases the hearing panel suggested that the council needed to look at some provision being made in the rural zone to enable some sort of structured development proposal to occur. Now, I know you haven't had a chance to
Potentially, yes, because if that was a directive from the panel, then yes. I didn't come across that one myself in Stream 13, but I did have another couple of rural to RVZ submissions that I was assessing. So I don't remember that coming up in there. I think it was more sort of it was going to be left for stage 3 when the RVZ is looked at. So I don't know the exact details of the halfway base station. Would it be Walter Peak?
I think it's Walter Peak, isn't it?
No, it's I remember, but in fact it was
Mount Christina.
No, it was Mount Christina, and
was it a Glenorchy at the top of the line?
No, that was south of the Devil's Nest staircase on the Kingston roads on the state highway side of the lake. And what was actually sought was that the provisions in the Mackenzie district upline, that was on that one, and Halfway Bay is directly across the lake from there, and they sought a rural visitor zone area. In both cases, the panel concluded that ultimately something, to keep those stations going as stations, there's probably some justification for visitor accommodation provisions, but not the rural visitor zone, and further work needed to be done. So that's what I was meaning. And I think there's appeals along the halfway base to stations. It's got a different name now. I'm not sure about the other one.
Yes.
I think it is Tiana Developments.
Sorry?
I think the submitter's name was Tiana Developments.
That's Real Journeys.
Tiana Developments is Real Journeys, and that's what the station where they wanted to rezone and so they can have weddings on the foreshore. That's totally different.
So if I'm understanding you, perhaps the suggestion is that to provide for these objectives and policies that seek to provide for diversification, including visitor accommodation, that the full discretionary regime may not be the answer.
Maybe the interim.
Yes, maybe there are some locations, if there was enough information and analysis against the objectives and policies, where full discretionary may not be required. Because there are two questions that for us, or for me, is more liberal regime, such as the visitor accommodation subzone, potentially consistent with the objectives and policies for the rural zone? In other words, is it prevented by those objectives and policies such that a full discretionary is really required in the whole rural zone? And we have to think about that. And the second question is, do we have any locations where we've got enough information and detail to be able to say, yes, this is a location where, even though the rules, the provisions don't provide for VA, a subzone, they could be created for this location? And that's the second question. The two that come to mind are the Glendean one and the Tees one, which we're going to ask you about. My question for you is, do the rural zone provisions prevent consideration of a subzone type approach, or is it just not provided for at the moment?
It's not provided for at the moment. Whether it's prevented or not, I mean, you would have to make some changes to the objectives and policies to enable that. I would struggle with finding locations where there's enough information. And for example, I can't think of a good example, apart from Tees, and I have to talk about that one. But the breadth of detail that would be required for these, potentially more sensitive locations, or maybe they're not sensitive. It just sounds to me like the level of detail you need for a resource consent, and you might as well go down that route. I acknowledge that the full discretionary regime might put people off. They're sort of, you know, they're seeing notification, they're seeing that they're going to be potentially turned down. I don't know how many VA proposals in the rural zone currently are turned down or notified. I wouldn't have thought of anything. It's usually new platforms and submissions that are notified.
I was going to go back to Stephen and say how many are applied for.
Yeah, and our branches station have applied for, you know, sort of sharing quarters that could be let out, you know, you sort of fly in and have your High Country station experience. I don't think any of those would have been notified, turned down. But because of the landscape issues, I think it would be difficult to, without a lot of information that would seem more like a resource consent, to find locations, you know, put an appropriate boundary around them, come up with, you know, say you were applying a restricted discretionary regime, coming up with the appropriate matters of discretion that would apply, but give certainty as well. From what I've looked at, from the submitters who have asked for these BASZs in the rural zones, the amount of detail, I think, just lends itself better to the resource consent process. I think the onus should be on them to come in with that sort of detail. I don't know that the council would have the resources to find these areas. I guess the halfway base station, you know, that's an opportunity for them to do that probably through the appeal now.
Because of the same factors, the sensitivity of the landscapes in the rural zone generally, the fact that we've got waterways often close proximity, the large extent of outstanding natural landscapes in the rural zone, does that mean that the breadth of matters that need to be taken into account for an application is more akin to was more easily managed through a full discretionary than a restricted discretionary?
That would be my view, yes. Yeah, the more enabling rules in the rural chapter are for very discreet things, you know, sort of sale of handicrafts and things like that, where you can really narrow it down and say this is a very small manageable activity and it can be controlled, you know, for the following reasons. But something, visitor accommodation has so many forms, you know, it could be very low level, could be enormous.
So therefore, any request to have a lesser level of activity status than full discretionary on a particular piece of land is very much then dependent on the sort of information we have, the level of assessment, and the detail, which then you say is actually what you'd be providing for the resource on the site.
That would be my view. Yeah. It would just be, just because the rural landscape is so different, you know, to sort of apply it would have to be so site specific, and that makes for a very messy plan.
Well, that's good. Thank you for that.
Yes. So if I may, just to clarify, Lochlinney Station is the other submitter we're trying to identify. They have lodged an appeal on stage one, and it includes, amongst other points, relief that the concept of the farm-based areas on the Mackenzie plan. Yes, be included into the proposed district plan for rural properties in excess of 1,000 hectares in area. And then they seek that within those farm-based areas, homestead, staff accommodation and farm buildings be a permitted or controlled activity. Specific relief for their station, and I think that goes to what we have been talking about as well.
Yes, and Ms. Deffler will have the same conflict of interest in discussing that as she has with these properties.
Yes, perceived. Yes.
the same perceived one was halfway paid from the ground.
Oh, potentially, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it might have been the same.
So, anyway, that's useful. And that the purpose I asked the question you answered anyway, which was, and you explained to Commissioner Dawson, more evidence and work is required.
Mm-hmm. And then my last question, is about the 4.5 metre building line restriction on the Coherent Hotel site in Fern Hill. We'll be hearing from Ms. Lizner who says that this is still a residential zone, welcome location, setback, session plan requires, etc. will still all be covered by the residential zone provisions, even if it's a VA subzone. Just explain to me more why you think, on top of that, the setback's needed. And also, it wasn't clear to us on the ground whether the adjoining sites are actually vacant at the moment.
Yes, the further submitter's site is vacant.
Which would be next door to this building restriction line.
Yes.
Both part of the days. Yes, and the furthest from the other side.
They're both vacant, yeah, next door to each other. So I recommended this based on two main factors. One was just the physical situation with how close people's properties are to each other in that area, and it is quite a compact, intimate little, I'm going to say cul-de-sac, but it does actually join up further down, but very, very narrow. It doesn't have just the kind of separation and natural separation that perhaps some of the other areas of Fern Hill Sunshine Bay do, where you're sort of separated by topography and you're not that close to your neighbour. So I looked at those particular circumstances and I wanted to respond to the further submitter as well. And I thought they raised valid concerns about the extension of, more visitor accommodation in their residential area. So the BRA was my, attempt at a compromise where the VASZ could be extended to allow for, an additional hotel or an extension or whatever it is that Coherent Hotels has planned, whilst being mindful of the residential neighbours and their expectations. And I was particularly mindful, of that further submitter is zoned lower density, and now they're adjoining medium density, and there are some differences and setbacks. And in terms of that, just the sort of the residential environment, in my view, it's not just about the setbacks and the built form, the potential for VA, and as the submitter said in their evidence, it may be a hotel. That has very different effects, in my view, on residential amenities than living next to a house that might be very close to your house. That makes sense.
Without this building line restriction, in other words, without a compromise, would you have been minded not to allow the VASZ to have extended so far towards the adjoining property?
Yes, potentially. Yes. Yes, I would have possibly recommended it be pulled back a bit. They already do have a very large VASZ in that area, and I think they own a lot of the property in that area. But just because a hotel has been buying up residential sections and wishes to expand on them, is not necessarily justification for making a subzone then appropriate for them to get on and build another hotel, because these are just residential sections at the moment. They haven't amalgamated them or anything like that.
I had some questions on that interface as well. Given that, just looking at it, there's no, that would be a sloping site, wouldn't it? So there's no recession claim applying. There's a 1.5 metre setback in the medium density and an 8 metre high bar. What would be different in the VASZ?
Nothing. It's just for the activity. Mm. It just enables the activity.
Could the bulk of the buildings, the footprint, be bigger, particularly if some of those lots were amalgamated?
Not just by being permitted, no, they would have to, I don't think there's any restriction on building footprint in the NDRZ, yet they would just amalgamate, or they'd just apply for a resource consent across the whole lot.
Yeah. So they could be larger buildings down that side, down that boundary, than if it was a series, than if it was individual houses on each of the allotments.
That's right, you build right across, yeah. Yep. You've got your 8 metre height restriction, but you can apply to breach that. Mm. I think it's not compliant, no.
Well, if you were to build units, which of course the medium density is allowed, and the building length applies above the ground floor level,
yes.
And that's 24 metres anyway.
Yes, yeah.
Would a unit development
would it have different effects? I was thinking about the effects of not so much the built form, but the underlying activity, because that's what the VASZ would enable. So a residential environment with, at the moment, expectations of residential neighbours, and possibly separate dwellings, but as you say, you could build across the whole lot. But the In this kind of reasonably sort of intimate site, I think that the effects of the VA activity itself are different from the effects of the residential activity that's currently anticipated.
Do you happen to know the size of that lot?
The neighbour's one?
Well, they're both the same size, I think, anyway, just judging, looking at it.
The neighbour's one's a bit bigger.
Well, the coherent one then.
Oh, the coherent one. No, it looks it looks smaller. I mean, I've got drawn rapid lines all over this map on page 95. It looks like it's a little bit smaller.
Well, I was just wondering in terms of the density rules. One to two units up there. Is it three units or two units? That's.
I can have a look at the size of it. Number 16 Richards Park Lane, which is the edge of the last one in there,
yes.
Is 564 square metres.
Right, so medium density you have two. So you'd have a difference between two units or possibly
the edge of a hotel.
Well, I'm going to say possibly in terms of the number of people, quite a few more, because it would be, you could easily get six or seven motel units in that same space, for example. But that's the difference in activity that you were talking about.
Yes, yes.
But they would still have to comply with the 45% coverage limit, isn't it?
That's right,
so
yes, yep. So
it's the intensity of the activity change.
It's the intensity, and it's the different type of activities. So coherent in their submit evidence, you know, just sort of said, look, all these things are just addressed anyway under the rules, and for open location, I agree, but yeah, the activity is potentially quite different.
Yes, I'd just like to ask a question regarding, it's on page 70 of your license report. It relates to property identified as 9 Frankton Road, and it's an area identified in yellow, and there's a, the zoning appears to be split between MDR and HDR, with MDR at Brisbane Street end. Looking at, when we had a look at the site, it looked to us, triangular piece on the corner of Brisbane Street is vacant at the moment.
Yes.
As is a little lot next to it, front of Brisbane Street.
Yep.
The lot immediately to the west looked to be traveller's accommodation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, backpackers. I can't quite recall what the other ones were.
I looked this morning. I used to have a residential building, but whether
they're
residential activities is hard to say.
Don't know.
Yeah. On the face of it, it looked like a better candidate for possibly BASN, given that you've got BASN across the roadway. Well, we've got travellers accommodation all around the area. And as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, it's also going to extend further along the south side of Frankton Road at some stage. There's a big vacant site there, which I think is exactly earmarked for a hotel.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering whether, in fact, what your thoughts were on that, because it did seem to be us to one of the better candidates for BASN.
Yes, yeah, I do agree. I found this was a difficult one to have a clear, you know, which is the right recommendation for it. And some of the, well, a lot of the submissions I assessed, it seemed reasonably clear whether they fitted into the policy framework, met the strategic direction of the PDP, etc. This one, not so much. So I looked at it from both perspectives, and I looked at the submitter's evidence in a bit more detail as well, where they did narrow it down just to that, the triangle and the little parcel next to it, ignoring the rest of it and ignoring the HDR, which they would have submitted on that because they didn't know what the HDR was going to enable. And I guess my main points of difference were that there's not a lot of sort of pure, if you like, residential zoning near the town centre anymore. There is a lot of HDR, and the provisions are reasonably enabling for VA. There's not much, I don't know, I mean, I guess it's whether we think, and the plan says, that there should still be provision for you know, residential and residential zones near the town centre, or whether it's appropriate that it can be a complete mix, you know, possibly even an emphasis on VA. And in this location, it's really close to all the rest of that HDR, where it could all turn into, you know, VA, or, you know, it's much more enabling. There's just not much left in walking distance. But on the other hand, it's ideally located for visitors to come and stay and walk to the town centre and all those other aspects. Yes.
And on screen 13, the panel noted that given the scope, it would have zoned that entire area.
HDR, yes. And I worked on that, and at the time, I definitely would have recommended that because of it met all the requirements for being located next to the town centre and everything else. But of course, I didn't have the VA provisions in mind. Yes, that's right. I mean, if that had been rezoned HDR, they wouldn't have submitted. They would probably be happy that they had that enabling framework.
It
that's right. There were quite a few of them, and I think it was just the timing of when.
Well, they were upsetting.
Yes. Well, that's right. Some of them were, and so they didn't know exactly what was going to be the outcome of the stage one zonings. You know exactly what was going to be under the VA variation.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so there were a few of them who, you know, will presumably be happy with where they've got to with rezonings. Yes, I did. So yes, I did struggle with this one. You know, it potentially could be a good candidate for.
Yeah, I'll go up a level for me to take us back to my favourite topic.
Wanna go?
Well, that's a good topic, I'll say that. No, it's in your summary of evidence, you say you consider that VAS zones are appropriately specific regulations for guiding the location of commercial scale visitor project activities in the underlying residential zones. And I get no, well, that may or may not be the case in terms of the specific zones, but you want to say and provide increased certainty regarding where visitor accommodation is an anticipated activity. I just want to test with you in terms of the most appropriate way to continue the strategic direction of VDP. One could look at it and say, well, we're just actually legitimizing what's already been there, as opposed to indicating a way forward. How do you feel about that?
Yes, there's definitely a mix with the notified VASs. Some of them do just are just seem to be over, you know, existing hotels and holiday parks and things like that. Yes. But some of them are over vacant pieces of land as well. And I've looked at the, particularly for the Fernhill Sunshine Bay ones, I've looked at the circumstances of those sites. You know, are they sort of, am I comfortable with their separation from residential areas, you know, with regard to my views on building restriction areas and things like that. So, yes, there is definitely an extent of, putting that overlay over things that are already operating, but there's definitely some of the notified ones are vacant, and some of the extensions that people have sought that I recommended are vacant as well. Possibly mainly the Fernhill Sunshine Bay ones. I can't remember. Oh no, there might have been a few sort of smaller extensions in Wanaka. A site at the end of Anderson Road, Albury Road. But then I think you might be making the point there that they've already probably operating as VA under their consent.
It does seem to the purpose of the strategic direction of VDP, one of them is, to promote growth in the visitor industry. So, given that this is a document that's going to stick around for, I was just looking at, is there any, ability to look forward rather than just approve what's already been done?
Yes, definitely. Yes, and yeah, if the council had had the resources or the time or whatever to do that kind of looking forward stuff, then that could have been really useful. And
is there a role for a VS then, or is that just more for the looking at the PDP as well as a plan of change? Or?
It kind of is a role for that, but the VASZ just falls out of those other provisions, and then the purpose of those is to figure out where VA fits and these, and RVA homestay activities fit into the residential zones in particular. So it's been mainly driven by a response to that. The VASZs have just sort of been, rolled in and wrapped up with that, without the benefit of a wider strategic view. Some of the submitters have suggested other areas and other ways of doing it. that Ms. Balbais has looked at, you know, where they've suggested areas, putting it the other way around, so saying these are residential areas outside that, it's a, you know, it's more enabling. But there's no decent analysis in there of whether that's appropriate for those communities or future communities. So we've gone as far as we can within the scope of what we have to see, yeah, is it providing enough of that?
And one of the parameters you look at is prevent and removing small subsequents, whereas what we seem to be doing in my favourite subject, which is what I go on, is providing lots of distinct little subzones, which are basically existing activities, rather than looking at a way of somehow
joining
for example, in the medium density zone, saying, okay, well, that's potentially, I mean, it's a signal by going from low to medium, but it's almost like we may or may not be missing the next step.
Yes. So the more enabling provisions that Ms. Balbais was looking at will have sort of picked up some of that with that MDR near the town centre.
Yeah.
And I do acknowledge that there are you know, spot zone BASZs dotted through there.
And even outside of that, if you look at that specific area,
there's a few others.
Accommodation operations, the Pines, for example, which is in the existence long before I got there, that are just already existing. So
And then the other side of it, so there's a role for VASZs in those residential zones that are meant to be primarily for residential purposes, to find out where direct where VA can go, and it could be RVA, you can still develop residential under a VASZ. You don't have to go down the VA path. But it perhaps finds some areas, and it's probably not perfect for where these things can go ahead. And then outside that, you've got all the other enabling zones, the town centre, business mixed use, and high density. And there's a lot of that around Queenstown. There's reasonably large area of business mixed use in Wanaka along Anderson Road. So there are outside of this policy framework, there are those other zones that hopefully provide for future growth of the visitor industry.
That's the way you, as a visitor, you'd want to be next to a car maintenance yard as a place, it's another point of time.
But you could imagine, that's right. I mean, but you could imagine perhaps redevelopment. I'm not too sure.
And the one thing you can guarantee, I would suggest, is redevelopment is coming. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Edward.
Thank you.
Do you have any news regarding the teeth problem?
Sorry, just to point you in the right direction, the evidence in chief for TEAS is the supplementary statement of Ms. Devlin's.
Yes.
So that's where we find that.
Yes.
Thank you.
in the rural zones, but potentially in a rural visitor accommodation subzone, if there was such a thing. And the notification versus non-notification, because I think the evidence, I'll just call it the evidence, I think touches on if one dropped to restricted discretionary, say, in an identified area that could be a visitor accommodation subzone, that may preclude notification. And that in this area, given the neighbours, the issues, the outstanding landscape, the adjoining dockland, visitor use of the area generally, that notification is more appropriate.
Yes, in my view, it would be. And I've talked to my evidence also about the framework that's proposed in the evidence provided by Ms. Stewart. And I know that you've already talked about these matters with Ms. Devlin, but I would agree with the comments that she has made that this is probably a good example of if we were to apply a rural visitor accommodation subzone, the provisions probably would look quite a lot like what has been proposed here. In my view, they are very bespoke. In my view, it doesn't provide a framework that would provide be a template that could be provided in other areas. The matters of discretion is a very long list in my view. And I think it does more lend itself to the more appropriate activity today is being discretionary. Just because of the breadth of things that we would need to consider. The provisions that are proposed by Ms. Stewart, I also struggled with them a little bit in terms of their application. She's recommending that the whole landholder, which is a significant area of land, that the subzone applies to the whole thing, but the rules only apply to the areas A and B. And so that did make a question of what about the rest of it?
Yes, I found that confusing.
That was, there's uncertainty there around if you apply a subzone across the entire site, does that then set up an expectation that the entire site could be used for visitor accommodation?
And in that expectation, whether it's over a large site or even smaller A and B areas, having zoned it the A subzone, that in your view, does that bring with it an expectation that VA activity in some form is likely to be appropriate?
I think it does, yes. And it's, that is certainly the approach that we've taken with the VA subzones in the urban areas. And I think that you wouldn't apply a VA subzone on an area where you hadn't gone through a process of considering whether or not VA would be appropriate.
So just as similarly to the answers Ms. Devlin gave me, and you applying that to the TIS group, I understand you to be saying, well, really the full, the deep discretionary activity application provisions that are in the rural area generally is the most appropriate route to go down to consider any particular proposal in this location.
Yes.
And in your view, that should be able to be notified?
Yes.
So that brings us to the end of my part of application. I have noted that after we had that conversation this morning, some additional issues were raised by the panel on sort of site-specific rules. The question for you is, do you want me to go down to that level of detail in terms of every provision we might respond to in the reply, or is it more those sort of high-level core key issues that the panel has raised?
Certainly not. I don't think we need to worry about the site-specific rules. But in terms of the zoning provisions that we asked, as the chief suggested, she would reconsider various matters.
Yes. For example, the question about the objectives and policies. The two objectives and management, and maybe combining them.
Or whatever. But turning them into objectives.
Yes.
Fundamental.
Yes. Yes, I'll go to that level of detail.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
I just think that is probably more helpful earlier than later than this particular case.
Certainly. Okay, well, we'll get that filed by the end of next week. Okay. At the latest. And unless you have any further questions from me, I'll hand over to Mr. Wakefield. We've got about 15 minutes before the lunch adjourns.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for your assistance. Yes,
you're welcome.
All 15 minutes for
so this isn't the end of a long journey.
Maybe some years before we continue.
Time to move on to part B, which Ms. Scott would have introduced, relating to transport, earthworks and signage. In terms of organisational or administrational type matters, we have always anticipated on running it with transport and then earthworks and signage, and we've got our three transport witnesses here now just going. If it looks as though we're progressing through transport quickly, then we've got a man to lead on signage who can come in this afternoon. The issue with earthworks is we've got Mr. Cernich, who's travelling down from Auckland,
yes,
on the red eye tomorrow. And so it's just a case of the possibility of him being called this afternoon. So if there's no issue, if it looks like we are progressing with transport fairly quickly, then we'll move to signage and then we can finish up with earthworks tomorrow. You will have received our open submissions, which capture all of the topics as part of Stream 15. The submissions addressing transport begin at paragraph 6.1 on page 11. Have you had a chance to read those submissions, or would it be helpful if I talked through those?
Absolutely.
Well, the matters of dispute remaining between the council and the submitters are summarised in 6.3. They're also picked up in the summaries of evidence that have been filed on behalf of Mr. Crosswell, Smith, and Ms. Jones. those in any detail, but the key issues remaining relate to the HTGA rules, threshold of respective HTGAs, and the minimum parking requirements. They seem to be the three sticking points which our respective witnesses will talk to today. At 6.4, I addressed the definition of public water ferry services. And this was a matter that was raised by Mr. Farrell in his evidence for Real Journeys. And that particular matter relates to a concern from Mr. Farrell that the definition differs from that which appears in the Land Transport Management Act. But the key point we make in these submissions here is that the definition in Section 5 of that particular Act is for public transport service, whereas this definition is for public water ferry services. So there's two different definitions that we're talking to there. And in this instance, for the Chapter 29 provisions, the Council is proposing a definition which captures ferry services only. And if you roll over the page at 6.7 and 6.8, 6.8 outlines that the two definitions do not relate to the same type of service, the PDP definition being more specific than that used in the Land Transport Management Act.
And just taking the evidence and submissions we will hear from Real Journeys, what distinguishes the Ernst Law from public water ferry service, given that it runs on a regular basis, regular schedule, and as I understand it from the evidence, and anecdotally, one can get a one-way ticket and take the bike over and bike trail and various other things.
Very astute. No, this is a matter that we have talked about, and as currently termed in the PDP, yes, there is an argument that those tourist services like the Ernst Law are captured by the definition here, and as a result becomes something more akin to a public transport service as well as an operation for tourism. Ms. Jones does address this in her evidence in chief and also in her rebuttal, and it might be that she'll be able to address and respond to that question in her evidence for you as well. But I suspect that Real Journeys will continue to offer the same view that Mr. Farrell has put into his evidence, being that it makes somewhat of a nonsense of the distinction if the Ernst Law is able to be considered a public transport service here. So at 6.9, coming back to the submissions here, I refer to the fact that Ms. Jones outlines in her rebuttal why reliance on the Land Transport Management Act definition would not be appropriate, with certain rules potentially being made redundant. In addition, submitted on behalf of Council that incorporating the LTMA definition into the PDP could then result in unintended consequences for other provisions. What definition should be used in the PDP context is a question of appropriateness, submitted that when preparing a district plan, there's no express requirement to adopt or rely on a definition that is used in the RMA or elsewhere. And it's paragraph 6.11, we note that while consistency with definitions used in the RMA or other relevant legislation is a sound objective, there may be scenarios or situations where a modified definition is appropriate. In this scenario, the issue of consistency does not clearly arise, as although the services share similar characteristics, the defined phrases are different. Further, Ms. Jones provided a clear resource management rationale for the use of a separate definition here, and has submitted that this is an example where a bespoke definition is appropriate in order to satisfy Part 5 of the RMA and give proper meaning to the objective and policy framework of Chapter 29. The next matter addressed is the request by Willow Ridge Developments Limited to place or put Stage 2 on hold, pending notification in the submission process for the remaining zone provisions. And paragraph 6.13, we submit there that placing Stage 2 on hold is unnecessary and a process request that's not being entertained by the Council. The fact of the matter is we're here as part of the hearings for stage two, and putting the matter on hold now would seem to be an extraordinary administrative hassle. And further, we go on to say that the provisions that have been notified and applied to roads as defined and to apply across the district. This was made clear in the public notice. In terms of any additional zones that have been notified, council will, if necessary or appropriate, notify zone or site-specific provisions into Chapter 29 in the later stages of the PDP, which will enable an opportunity for submitters to submit on those zones or those site-specific provisions. For example, if any zone-specific provisions that would apply to the industrial zones are considered necessary for Chapter 29, they will be notified along with that industrial zone chapter. Paragraph 6.14, I note that consistent with previous advice to the panel, the submitter considers that additional zone or site-specific provisions relating to transport matters are required. They will be considered alongside a submission on the zone that has been notified in that later stage. But that position does not extend to relitigating the strategic direction chapters or the other ops, poles, or provisions of the transport chapter, unless they are subject to a variation. Pause now if there's any questions, or happy to call Mr. Crosswell.
Well, give us 2 minutes, please. One.
Super.
Are there any questions?
No.
No questions, I think, rather than calling someone on the room for lunch.
Oh, of course. That's right. I've lost track of time there. Excellent. Oh, that seems like a good opportunity.
Yes.
Finish with Mr. Crosswell to be called afterwards, yeah?
Yes, that's fine. So the turn to the